Leaders often emerge when they see an unmet need. They see the gap, and with or without a title, they find a way to forge a new path and to bring others with them. Our guest on this episode is that type of leader.
If there's a flower or a plant that's not thriving, you attribute it to the soil that it's planted in. So similarly, we wanted to be the garden that grew women leaders.
That's Shawn Tavon, the founder of Stride, a women's leadership forum that's intentional about growing women leaders in an emotionally safe environment. Leveraging more than 20 years of corporate experience as a cultural and operational change agent, Shanta created Stride to fill a gap in career development. She set forth with the understanding that women experience and administer leadership differently than men do. Promoting women into new and progressive leadership capacities is among the forum's many goals. The STRIDE acronym stands for S, support, T, transform, R, reach, I, incorporate. And the D stands for deliberately, advocating for and sponsoring women. And lastly, the E is to educate. In addition to STRIDE, Shanta holds a leadership position at Kaiser Permanente. She also serves as the secretary of the board of directors for the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Washington, as well as the vice president of the Montgomery County Historical Society. Shanta holds a Bachelor of Science degree in biology from Vanderbilt University and a Master's of Business Administration from Capella University. She's a certified corporate coach and a licensed Zumba instructor.
You think about how men have generationally looked out for each other. It's very intentional. It starts very, very early. Well, there are tenets that we can borrow, that we can apply, and we can make it very relevant to the female experience.
I'm Meryl McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and to gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. And now, Shawn Tavon. Shanta, thanks so much for joining us. I've always been so impressed with your work in advancing women in leadership roles. And so what I'd love to do is just start with an overview of your own path to leadership.
Thank you so much for having me on, Meryl. When I think about my path to leadership, I'll say I stumbled onto it. And I say that because when I first got put in a formal position of management, I didn't understand that there was a difference between management and leadership. I really mimicked what I saw that my boss was doing as a method of applying management or leadership. And as I became more comfortable with the functions of being someone who had direct reports, I saw that there was a way for me to begin to tailor it to my natural style or my particular strengths in order to make it more effective. And that's when I began to realize, and through some research and my own investigation, that leadership was very different from management. So that began this journey and actually sparked a lifelong now passion around leadership and leadership for women in particular. But from there, I rose through successive, rather higher roles of responsibility, larger teams, diverse teams, and dispersed teams in the healthcare field. I was on the consulting side for quite a while and remotely managing teams. But along the way, really began to understand that leadership is a set of behaviors, which then by definition meant they could be identified and honed, refined, practiced, mastered. So on the ongoing journey of improving my leadership capacity and capability, I began to see the fruits of that by being awarded higher roles and higher levels of responsibility. So as of now, I am a leader who has responsibility for teams in four different regions within the organization that I do work for, Kaiser Permanente. And it's a level of complexity with a number of stakeholders partners, collaborators, both internal and external to the organization. That's frankly exciting.
You know, it's so interesting to hear you say long ago you led a remote team. Do you have any tips for our listeners in terms of what really made that successful?
Communication. Communication. It sounds so trite, but it is so true. It really is engaging with people on a frequent, regular basis around their circumstances, their needs, their expectations, their performance, and ensuring that they have what they need in order to be successful, especially in reaching their goals, shared goals, and organizational goals that ensures alignment and satisfaction and good productivity and output. I can't stress that enough.
And how did you do that? Because I assume at that point you weren't on Zoom, or were you?
No, there was a life before Zoom. So right. It did feel low tech at the time. So it's a lot of phone calls for sure, a lot of emails. And so it did require quite a bit of collaboration and trust. And so that meant more phone work, I would say, than email. I mean, email is easy, but you can't put tone or inflection or some of the nonverbal warmth behind an email. So it was a lot of phone conversations.
And was a lot of that organic, or was it really a like established formal cadence to the calls?
A bit of both. I'm a planner, so I like to have some routine. And so it started out as a very structured tempo and frequency and schedule of discussions. But then in the course of interacting, as the relationship continued to build, the discussions became much more organic. And so a really good example today, my one-on-ones with my direct reports, I ask them to set the agenda, that they know this is their time that's with me and it's dedicated. It's also an opportunity for me to be a support to them. You know, leading people is hard. And it's an emotional investment if we're doing it right.
You know, one of the things I've heard you talk about is that you realized as you were really going up through the ranks that there's a real gap for women, both culturally and operationally. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I am an African-American woman, and I realized over the course of my career, in retrospect, that I didn't seem to know a lot of the things that I saw other people doing. And so I wondered about that. But you know, even as I was talking about things like not recognizing that there was a difference between leadership and management, or the importance of, say, really forming relationships, not necessarily calling networking, and we can come back to that later, but also how to navigate in an organization and understanding that the casual meetups after work or the connections that you make, even the hallway conversations, are so important to letting people know who you are, so that when there's an opportunity for a new assignment or promotion or even just in a review, that people have this well-rounded view of you. Earlier in my career, I didn't necessarily have formal mentors. And so as I began this self-driven journey to understand leadership and those behaviors I was talking about and the kinds of unwritten rules that are out there and that people need to understand in order to successfully navigate their way through their careers, but frankly, also through life, surely I was not the only one that was feeling a little left out, until one day about 8 years ago, I read an article on the persistent wage gap between the genders. And that was the tipping point. That was when I felt like, okay, I don't know of a forum where I have an opportunity to go and talk about this with other women, to see how they're navigating it, how this impacts them, how they're feeling about it. And so I just decided, you know what? I'm going to pull together a group of women that I know that I was working with over lunch one day. I'll send out the article in advance, and then we'll just have a discussion about it. And honestly, that's how Stride was born.
So in Stride, for our listeners, is a women's leadership forum that you developed that's been incredibly successful. Talk a little bit about it. First of all, what does Stride stand for?
Well, it's funny. I backed into what Stride stood for. I came up with the name itself before I had any thought about what the letters stood for. I wanted it to be a word infused with meaning, that it was purposeful, that it was intentional, that it portrayed strength, that it portrayed direction, that it was something that represented action that was planned.
Yeah, it's a great name.
Thank you. And so when I was thinking about that, you know, progress, a journey, moving forward, and doing it with purpose and precision, you know, I was playing with different words and stride, you know, a stride. When you think about someone striding across the room, that word stride is usually used in the context of all of those things I just described. There's a reason that they're going in that direction. They're doing it in such a way that it conveys that there is urgency and there's purpose behind it. It's planned. It's intentional. As we began to formalize the forum and thinking about how we would describe the forum to other people, especially the purpose, you know, what gave this forum meaning and how it was going to be different from anything else. That's how we began to use the letters and stride to mark that out. The whole purpose is to support women leaders, whether they are in leadership or they are aspiring to be in leadership. We want to be a network, a safe environment for women leaders to get support for their journey. We want to transform the reality of women aspiring to be and those who are in leadership, the way that they are experiencing leadership today. And so in being purposeful about supporting women leaders and helping them to transform their readiness throughout their journey, that also means we're very intentional about reaching out to bring other people along. It's not enough that we're only concerned with ourselves, those who are already in the journey, but we want to be reaching out and recruiting more women leaders, because we all know there's room for more. As I was thinking about some of the formal and, more importantly, informal ways that leaders are getting some of this advice and this coaching and advocacy and exposure to corporate America and the kinds of politics and the ways relationships can really contribute to what's going on, I realized there's a framework that we can really borrow from the Old Boy Network. You think about how men have generationally looked out for each other's kids and their successors, to think about how their legacy is going to continue on. It's very intentional and it starts very, very early. Well, there are tenets that we can borrow from that, principles that we can apply, and we can make it very relevant to the female experience. We're very intentional about what we're doing, not only in developing that network and that safe environment, but also using whatever platform and spheres of influence that we happen to be in to be actively sponsoring and advocating for other women. And then, you know, the formal education component, making sure that women are prepared, that they are aware that there are forces at play, whether it's political, whether it is structural, whether it is something that none of us could have predicted, like a pandemic, but there are ways that these kinds of things impact women that just happen to be very, very different than the ways that they impact and play out for men. So that's how we describe Stride.
Yeah, I think about incorporating the best attributes in the Old Boys Network. You know, I just think that's so interesting, rather than fighting it or complaining about it, to learn from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really easy to sit back and complain about all that you don't have, right? I'm not a man. I'm not a white male. You know what? I'm never going to be those things. And so I can waste valuable emotional energy on that, or I can channel that into areas that I can't control, into the things that I can do about leading and developing from where I am, using and leveraging my unique strengths and gifts.
And it's, you know, it's just been so wonderful to watch you as you've done this, Shanta, in terms of really just stepping into what are your gifts and bringing them to so many people. I know when we first met and you invited me into the Stride Network, I was blown away by the incredible women that you had, the conversations you're leading. And I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about several of the steps you took really to form the organization and how it's organized.
Sure. When I started this, it was by no means well organized in my head. It really did start as kind of like a lunch and learn. I really just started to listen to what other people's needs were, what other women's needs were around this particular topic. So the forum was great. And there were other things that they felt like that they needed that they just weren't getting. And so that's when the purpose became clarified that it's not necessarily about the topic of conversation. It's about the environment. If there's a flower or a plant that's not thriving, you attribute it to the soil that it's planted in. So similarly, we wanted to be the garden that grew women leaders and grew them to be as successful as they possibly could be by augmenting whatever their formal training was with the kind of thing that they weren't already getting, because maybe they just didn't know what they didn't know.
So let's share with our listeners some of the things that you were doing, just so we can put some color around this. So for example, the group that I was in was a kind of a small group of very senior women who each took turns really leading the group or bringing different content.
Yeah, so there are several different forums that do speak to women leaders at different points in their journey. So the large forum, the General Stride Forum, is open and free to anyone who'd like to participate. The forum that you're speaking of, Stride Forward, a smaller cohort of women who were invited to join that particular cohort, because like you said, as I assessed who was joining and participating in Stride, I began to see that based on where women were in their respective journeys, their needs were a little different. And so being leaders who were established in their careers and looking to make a leap into the next executive levels, their needs were going to be different from those that were just starting out or were in their first frontline leadership position and still trying to figure out what is the what. One of the things that we stress is that every woman's leadership journey is special. It has value. We all can learn from each other. Granted, there are going to be some leadership journeys that blaze paths that change millions of lives. But even if a person's leadership journey changes one life, then it served a purpose and it was, I'll call it sacred for lack of a better word, in that it enriched the entire human experience. And so in the Stride Forward cohort, when we first launched it, we were having women from a variety of industries and different walks of life come and share their unique journeys. Since then, I've also launched another forum, also invitation only, also smaller, called Stride Foundations. These are women who are trying to get to their first, say, director level role. They're trying to really master the fundamentals. They're really trying to make sure they understand what it takes to make the leap from, say, an individual contributor and what makes people successful based on their own power and input versus what it takes to actually be successful in leading a team and motivating that team to pull in a singular direction with the best outcomes possible. So as you can imagine, the kinds of conversations, the topics, the content in particular, while they may be similar in theme to the advanced cohort, the actual tactics are going to be at a different level.
And then you also, as I understand it, now have regional groups. Is that right?
We do. So a lot of the forums that I just talked about are largely virtual. We also stood up local-based teams in various parts of the country that would meet in person, because it is a different level of engagement when you're able to meet with people and sit side by side with them. You're able to build deeper connection. You're able to create those individual relationships for, say, your own personal support system within this larger framework, but then making these regionally based or locally based forums also a component of the broader Stride set of offerings. It gives people to further differentiate what that particular group is needing for the moment. But overall, then the leaders of those groups are staying aligned with me and the larger vision.
Now, as you've done this, what approaches have you found to be most effective in persuading people to join you?
thankfully, I don't feel like I've had to do a lot of persuasion. And maybe that's because, one, I'm so passionate about the topic. But I think more than anything, because this gap existed for so many different people, when I explain the purpose of STRIDE or I talk about STRIDE, I see that it resonates in other people that are like, yes, this is what I've been missing.
How many women are now in the STRIDE network?
Our distribution list right now is about 300.
And how would those of our listeners who are women and might be interested in learning more about STRIDE, how would they do that?
Very easy. We do have a website, westridetogether.com.
Just to drive home the point, if somebody is interested in a group such as yours, they can go to westridetogether.com. And can they sign up there, or how does that work?
Yes, they can. Actually, there is a way to sign up to become part of our mailing list. We will begin to push out also blog posts and then also expand our digital presence, so on social media. But all of the content would be available and centralized through the website, westridetogether.com.
So let's switch topics a little bit here. And, you know, you've often talked about the fact that it's really important to surround yourself with the right people. How do you define who the right people are?
I would say the right people have to be defined as those who are invested in your success, that are aligned in your purpose, that they can challenge you with love on a variety of perspectives, and who are ultimately going to be invested in helping you get to where you want to be.
And how do you, when you're finding yourself spending time with people who don't fit that process, you know, a lot of people talk about weeding your garden, right? Mm-hmm. And the mm-hmm. importance of sometimes letting go of people that aren't really supporting you or holding you back.
Yeah, that's hard, because sometimes those people are people who are very close to you, like immediate family. And it's emotional. I don't want to downplay that process of refining your inner circle or your personal board of directors, you know, other terms I like to use around this. It can be a little painful, because if your intent is growing as a person, as a leader, that means you will have to change not only what you think, but what you do. And so then by definition, if you're going to change what you are doing and how you're thinking, the people that are around you are also going to have to change, or are at least going to have to be faced with a change in how they are interacting with you. And some people don't deal well with change. Several years ago, I spent a year very intentionally cultivating the five people that I surround myself with. As I did that, I saw changes so quickly in what I was doing, the kind of output I was achieving, the quality of different areas of my life, where I had substituted people that I was spending time with in order to learn different things or to challenge me to show up in different ways in those respective areas. And I was amazed, as I look back over, say, a 10 to 12 month period, where I started that year versus where I ended that year, that it's made me a believer in this. Absolutely. The first single most important decision that a person can make is to determine who they want to be. And then once you've made that determination, who you want to surround yourself with.
You know, it's interesting as you're talking about this and building your network. How do you think about a network relative to networking? Are they the same thing or different?
So to me, they're different. And I am a natural introvert, meaning I recharge by being by myself and away from people. I can be an extrovert if the situation calls for it. But the act of networking is something that I was not excited about doing until I reframed it and said, you know, really all this is doing, it's not the kind of transactional used car salesman kind of thing where you're passing out business cards, shaking hands and kissing babies. It just felt unnatural for me to act in that way. But when I realized networking is actually just creating relationships, connections and building relationships based on those connections, and I can do that one-on-one, that it lost a lot of the negative connotation for me, the act of networking. And so today, if I say go to a conference and I don't know anybody, I may say, I'm going to meet 5 new people today and exchange information and stay in contact with them over time. That's it. That becomes my objective, forming a connection one-on-one as opposed to going in and feeling like I need to meet and absorb everybody that's in that particular universe. A network then is a group of people or connections that you are able to call upon for a number of needs. The closer the connection is, the more meaningful of the term that I use to refer to those people. So my inner circle or my personal board of directors is relatively small as compared to, say, the number of LinkedIn connections that I have, which is, you know, thousands. But maintaining the different levels of relationships is important because you are going to be asking for or seeking to get different things from the different levels of connections.
Obviously, all these things do take intention and time. And I'm just wondering, how do you really plan to grow or sustain your network so that you have the most impact for Stride going forward?
You know, that's an interesting question. As I continue to show up authentically and seek to build relationships and connections and be supportive of people around me, Stride is going to benefit as a consequence of that. It's very difficult for me in some ways to think about growing Stride separately from who I am and how I show up, because it began as a reflection of a gap, a need that I specifically had. And so in attracting other women and leaders to support Stride and participate in it, they came because of me and my energy and how I showed up in the ways to fill that gap that also resonated with them. And so I feel like it is unintended consequence of me continuing to be purposeful for how Shanta as an individual chooses to contribute to my spheres of influences. And Stride happens to be part of that.
And as I've, you know, really watched you grow the network, one of the things I've seen is that although you've kept your vision very strong, you've kind of stepped back and let other people step in different ways. And in some ways, that's somewhat letting go. And I'm wondering, what do you think you'll need to let go of for Stride to really continue to thrive?
Great question. So by necessity, number one, I had to relinquish some of that. And I wouldn't say actually relinquish. I'll say disperse some of that leadership to other people in order to help me, right? So you can't grow unless you're growing and developing others, especially when you're aligned in purpose and vision. But in terms of leading Stride and what I think leaders in general should be letting go of in order to continue to grow and develop. And I, as I think about it, had to do this even as Stride grew, is to recognize that I don't need to be right all the time. And I don't need to know it all. I need to have enough people around me to make sure we get to the right answer, and who do know the things I don't know, and who know the things that I don't know I don't know. And so I have to make sure that I'm articulating my position well enough to make sure people understand what I'm bringing to the table, to then also attract a complement to help round out what Stride needs, what maybe I need in order to support me in my development and my career, but then also just to help me continue to grow as a person. Letting go of being comfortable. You know, growth means you have to be trying something new. And when you're trying something new, you're not immediately going to be an expert. But the beauty of growth is in the growing pains. You know, that's where you learn more about yourself. That's where you learn more about others. And that's where you learn, you know, who is available to help you in that moment, but also who can be a real support and advocate for you in the future. I wanted to share with you something that I heard on a podcast, and that is letting go of leading from the basis of someone else's story. And I thought that was a perfect way to describe how I was showing up in my first leadership role. I was operating based on what I saw somebody else was doing. And it wasn't until I began to understand my story and the power of my gifts that my leadership really began to evolve and the impact and scope of it began to take off. And it's the same for Stride.
You know, I think it's really interesting, too, when you're talking about letting go, you know, from leading based on someone else's story. I actually thought you were going to go in a different direction, which was sometimes the people we're leading have a story that we let impact us, right? And this is, we're doing workshops with horses where people actually, in working with the horse, learn how to clarify their own communication and intent, because you can't put a story on the horse. So they're a wonderful feedback loop for so many of those conversations we have in our head about the other person.
Yeah. I think it still applies, though, you know, whether you're adopting someone else's story or whether you're letting someone else's story dictate how you tell your story.
Yeah.
It's still allowing a story other than your own to really be the determining factor in how you show up.
I love it. I think it's a really great point. The other thing I'd just like to quickly explore with you, the whole concept of not letting fear really drive you. We all get kind of gripped in fears of different things. How do you work yourself through that when you're worried about something or fearful of something?
I think a big part of it is taking the opportunity to kind of go back and view what I call your internal highlight reel. I'm thinking about, so these are the times when I've overcome fear and I navigated my way through it. I did it afraid if I had to, and I came out okay, and a lot of times even better than okay because of it. We all have those moments in time, whether we've taken the time to step back and recognize them for what they were is a different question. And it's, I think, internal work that anybody should do for themselves, even if it's only to rewrite your internal narrative, your monologue, the things that you say to yourself, which are going to be the most powerful words that you will ever hear. But if you think back to the time that you stepped out on faith, you relied on and believed in yourself, and then whether or not you achieved the specific objective that you wanted to achieve at that time, or you ended up learning something about yourself as a result, that was still a win.
Right.
That was still something that is going to set you up to be successful in the future if you choose to leverage it. So much of this is choice.
Well, this has really been a fantastic conversation.
Thank you. One other thing that I wanted to bring it up when we were talking about enlivening networks, and that is the fact that when you take the time to be ready, to be open, to be authentic around how you are showing up, you are going to attract what you're ready to receive.
Talk a little more about that.
Sure. And I think we've all experienced this in the form of some sort of disappointment. You know, maybe we didn't get the promotion, or things didn't work out the way that we wanted to in one way or another. And so you can look at that as, okay, they didn't like me, I wasn't prepared, this, that, and the other. But it could also be viewed as the universe's way of saying, you just weren't ready to receive all that came with that at this time. There's a universe of protection. You know, not only will the universe rise up to meet you when you make it very known what it is that you want, it will also protect you, right? Whether you're the universe, your higher being that is central to your spiritual practice, all of that is in play. And so when you're talking about also, say, engaging people or enlivening your network and recruiting people to your mission or to assist you along the way, it works the same with people. You know, if you're talking about the kinds of people that you're looking to surround yourself with or bring into your inner circle or make your personal board of directors, the people that are going to come to you and be ready to support you and come to your aid the caliber of those people are going to show up in direct response to what you are ready to receive.
That's a wonderful final tip for folks and a great reminder to all of us.
This is something I could talk about all day. So I'm quite honored that you asked me to participate and be a guest on your podcast. Thank you so again for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Shanta's work in women's leadership highlights the impact we can have on others' lives when we turn our ideas into action by simply going for it. Let's review a few key learnings. First, the stereotypical idea of networking as a transactional opportunity to meet lots of people is not the same as building a network. The latter is about focusing your efforts on making meaningful connections to have the impact you seek. This approach can entail creating an inner circle that functions like your own personal board of directors, as Shanta puts it. It can also mean letting go of people who do not support your growth or your mission. Often this process of weeding your garden is emotional, but it's worth it to gain higher quality results in your output and in different areas of your life. Second, when you are ready to activate or enliven your network, think about it in the universal sense. That is, as the saying goes, the universe gives us what we are ready to receive. A well-cultivated network will be ready to join or assist you in pursuing your mission if you've done the work to be open and authentic with other people. The caliber of people you attract will provide a level of support directly proportional to what you're ready to receive. Third, avoid letting fear of failure drive your decisions or keep you from pursuing your mission. One way to combat fear is by mentally calling upon your highlight reel or delivering an internal monologue to motivate you. No matter the outcome, whether you achieve your goal or not, overcoming fear and moving forward will help you come out better in some way. Pursuing a goal, despite being afraid, can often help others in a similar position gain stronger footing too. Last, your personal story and unique talents are essential in shaping your leadership style and purpose. Early on in Shanta's career, she replicated what she saw other leaders doing. Back then, she was operating from the basis of someone else's story, she says. It wasn't until she understood and became comfortable with her personality and her perspectives that she assembled a group and began to have significant impact. That, as Shanta said, is what leadership is about. Thank you, Shanta, for sharing your story with us. And thank you for joining us on Let Go and Lead.